From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm Nate Russell. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Glad you joined us today. We're back to the director's grind, talking to our friend Trevor Williams about his experience as a freelance director, building his resume, building his production company, and where the two intersect and where they diverge. So excited to chat with him, and thanks so much for tuning in. The summer rolls on here at UCB. We are, of course, getting ready for our career tracker to come back next week on this show. So excited to sort of check in with our filmmakers who we've been tracking every 7 weeks of their career. We're going to track them again next week. And also getting set for our book club episode to record that week of August 15th. So right now we're rolling through The Real Truth by Reed Martin to sort of get ready for that book club episode, which you can join in on as well if you'd like to read along and join our Facebook Live and episode that we're going to record the week of August 15th. You still have plenty of time to do so. Sophie's here too. Hey, Sophie.
Hey.
How's your book going?
You know, it's going well.
Yeah.
Learning a lot.
You know, I'm digging through it. You know, I had a little time on the beach this weekend. I actually brought it with me, although I will say I didn't get to read to it as much as I wanted to. But that's what having two children on the beach will do.
Mm-hmm.
But good summer beach read.
Yeah. Nice and, you know, as big as the book is, it's very digestible.
Yeah. And so we're excited to sort of check in and get all of Sophie's hot takes on that.
Oh, yeah,
in a couple of weeks. I saw a couple of things, Sophie, that feel like they're worth noting here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see Vimeo shut down their SVOD service?
Shut down.
They shut it down. It didn't even get off the ground. If anybody saw this, Vimeo had been planning to launch a subscription video on demand service, and they pulled the plug. They decided it's not part of their what they want to be as a company, and they sort of pulled back on it, which is a bummer because Vimeo they already had that success. I mean, everybody sort of thought, oh, they bought High Maintenance, they launched it, you know, into that next level. Why not do more of that? But I guess not in the cards for them.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what the motivation was behind that. That's very. It's disappointing.
I mean, I think it's like the ground is so shaky, right? I mean, we've seen a few of these places shutting down. I mean, the on the flip side, the other news that came out this week was Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud streaming platform has a launch date. So they have a whole slate of stuff that they're coming out with.
That's so cool.
One door closes, another one opens up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, and it has a familiar ring to it. It's going to be an app that's available for free. But you can pay $2.99 a month for an ad-free viewing experience to watch all of their original programming.
Mm.
So low price threshold, but again, similar to CISO, the question is, can they get enough of a user base that wants to pay, you know, even $3 a month for content?
Which
I feel like if we'd said 10 years ago, you have the opportunity to pay $3 a month for, you know what I mean, for a slate of excellent programming, you'd have been like, sign me up, you know? I have this whole bundle, this cable bundle. I need to get rid of it. Now people are like, $3? I don't know.
Yeah, totally. Add it on to my Hulu, my Netflix, everything like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, more changes happening in this business, so excited to sort of track along with it, but excited to see the slate that... This latest stuff on the Kevin Hart Network looks awesome.
Yeah, what kind of stuff does it have?
I'm trying to pull it up right now. I saw that they are going to have a bunch of content from Just for Laughs.
Cool.
So they're going to have a bunch of stuff that's live from there. They're going to have all 7 seasons of Def Comedy Jam are going to be available.
Nice.
And there's a show that I've seen the YouTube version of it, but it's called Black Geo, which is like, it says here, a satirical investigative series into the origins of black culture through sketch comedy.
Cool.
But they do a thing that's like Black Geo. It's like Nat Geo, but sort of like for black culture, like on YouTube. And the videos are very funny. So I'm curious to see how it translates. They're also like very low from a production scope. They're like very low.
Like on purpose or?
I mean, I think some of it, but also I think it's just sort of like a DIY thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So curious to sort of see how something that's incubated in that space like launches with a bunch of money behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and with Kevin Hart behind it, who I've heard, you know, from some of the stuff here is going to be in, you know, in the sort of world and in a
like
lot of these projects.
Of
You know, in some way, shape or form, which makes sense. He's a huge asset to the network.
Totally.
But very curious to see how something like that, like makes a jump you know, with some money behind it as well, which is cool.
It sounds really funny. I'm already excited for that. That's very cool.
So if you're curious to sort of check that out, and again, that's launching August the 3rd. So take a look for that if you are so inclined. All right, to today's episode, Trevor Williams, our good buddy, a freelance director, one-third of the production company Pig Apple, who Ed Mundy, his business partner, has been on this show several times before. His third partner, Mac Williams, is also an excellent animator. All three of those guys have been on digital teams here at UCB and making content in our comedy community for a while, but also on their own. Their production company does a lot of great work, a lot of animation stuff, some live action stuff, which is Trevor's specialty. Trevor, as I also mentioned, on digital teams and beta teams here for years, doing a lot of sketch comedy. He directed the short film The Jane, which we talk about a little bit here, which was a Kickstarter-funded project featuring a lot of excellent UCB performers that Trevor then had a quick festival run with, and was eventually, we actually put that out on our Vimeo channel, so you can check that out at Vimeo/UCB Comedy. He also was the director for IFC Comedy Crib's Modern Dating, Clickbait Overload, which is another one of our productions, and the New York Television Festival winner, Incognito, by Allison Rich and Andrew Law. So director of all these different things, he's the kind of guy who has a real grinder mentality. He does what needs to be done to get his project off the ground. But I think that it's similar to several of the conversations we've had on this show before. He's a guy who's trying to take less of that other work and focus more on a lane that really excites him, which is directing. So excited to sort of chat with Trevor about that kind of navigation and growth, and also the balancing of what's good for the production company and what's good for Trevor, which, you know, Sophie, it's not always the same thing,
it's true.
Right?
It's not.
Yeah, it isn't. But of course, you know, hopefully there's a world where there are projects that are good for both of them. And I think that's what Trevor said as well, is he's trying to build both of them so that the work for himself and the company align. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's something that he can sort of triangulate.
Yeah, it sounds like he's on his way.
Yeah, absolutely. So excited to sit down with him. We took the opportunity as well, as always, to drink a beer while we had our chat. We sipped on the Bronx Boom Boom White IPA, which is only available in summer. It's only available July and August, so a limited run of the Boom Boom IPA from the Bronx. It says here, big floral and tropical aromas set up a delightfully balanced white IPA.
Ooh.
I can taste it now. Go to thebronxbrewery.com for information on all their craft beers, and especially this Boom Boom White IPA, which you can only catch right now while it's summertime. And thanks to the Bronx for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. All right, let's jump into it. Our conversation with director, freelance director, and production company owner, Trevor Williams. So, Trevor, what am I catching you in the middle of today? I know you're doing a lot of different stuff. What are you sort of like in between, or how are we?
Yeah.
How are we chatting?
You caught me in the middle of doing my taxes today, Dave.
Really?
Yeah.
It's July.
It's a couple months late. I filed that extension.
Oh, man.
And was just getting around to it. I find it pretty relaxing, actually. I was kicking some AC.
Yeah.
Just the gym shorts on at my house.
Right.
And
Do you your own taxes?
I do, except this is the year where I think I'm at the point where I have to give it to someone else.
Yeah.
Being a freelancer guy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll talk about the LLC structure.
Yeah.
But I have so many different things and so many write-offs and things that go in different categories.
Sure.
I've been trying to do it on my own for a long time, but I'm facing the music now.
You're hitting the point where it's got to be a different way.
I'm just out of my depth. I don't want to wind up in a white-collar prison.
Yeah.
I probably couldn't even get into the white-collar prison. I'm going straight to
right, you don't make enough money
max
to get into
security.
That white-collar
prison. Guys like me, they don't do well.
You got to make a lot.
In max security prison.
You know, it's a funny line, but I guess that's interesting. I guess that's an interesting place to start because, you know, you're an owner of a small business. Of a production company called Pig Apple.
Yeah.
Which Ed's been done this show a few times.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And Mac is a good friend.
I want to hear Ed's.
So, and we definitely didn't talk about the sort of formation and sort of the business side of that. But
okay.
I guess so you, as a freelance guy or a guy who's got a lot of different hustles, how come you don't run everything through the company? What's that choice?
Is Yeah, well, I guess that is...
Because you have an entity, right? The purpose of the company is to have an entity through which you can filter your work, right? Or is it not?
Let's see. I guess I'll I'll explain how it started, and then maybe the rest of it will make more sense.
Cool.
But basically, Nate, this comes down to a W-9-1099 division here of labor. We're going to have a tax talking podcast here.
Hey, I love it.
Releasing April 15th next year.
Yeah.
For the longest time, I make money two ways. People can hire me to direct or edit or write your video.
Yes.
Or screenplay or TV show. Or you can go to Pig Apple and be like, we have money to make a thing and we want you to do everything.
Right.
So for those full budgeted projects, before I teamed up with Ed Mack, I was handling those basically as Trevor Williams.
Right.
They would give me, you know, let's say hypothetically, someone gives me 10 grand to make a video.
Mm-hmm.
And I hire a bunch of people. And at the end of the day, what's left over for me is, let's say, $1,000. But in the course of making that video, you know, I received a check for 10 grand. And in my taxes, it's reported as $10,000 of 1099 income.
Yes.
With a shit ton of write-offs.
Right.
So what I was doing, what Mac and I and Ed and I were doing, is basically hiring each other to do a lot of stuff. And we're longtime friends. We went to college together. We've been making things together forever. And finally, from a business standpoint, it just made so much more sense to start a company. And the company absorbs that $10,000. And then we withdraw whatever we're owed from that. But there is sort of a shelter, a place in place there for us to operate those funds. Now,
right.
When it comes to, I guess what you're asking me is like, why don't I, if someone hires me to direct a video, why doesn't that go through Pig Apple?
Yeah, I mean, I guess because I definitely understand, like having been a freelancer in a similar position,
yeah.
you are essentially operating as a self-employed, unincorporated sole proprietorship in a way,
yeah.
Right? In fact, the checkbox on your tax form is individual/sole proprietor.
Correct.
Right? And I think that these rules have changed recently.
Yeah.
But there is that sort of like back like 10 years ago, it definitely was like, it's the same thing. Why bother incorporating if it's just you?
Yeah.
But my understanding from the perspective of having that, it's an LLC, right?
Yeah.
Having the LLC is that you're then set up as you could be set up as a vendor with any, it's almost like you're like in California, everybody has these like DBAs, right? Or loan out companies.
Yeah.
They have these loan outs that like either that operate just as like, it runs through my company and my company is the one who works for you. And I think mm-hmm. in big corporate structures, that's a way to get like on the vendor list for a studio, right?
Yeah.
And I think that in California too, there's a bunch of labor laws that make people go that way. But you're saying that you actively do not take freelance directing work that is just Trevor Williams and filter it through your LLC. You do that as Trevor Williams individual?
Usually, yeah. And I think the reason for that is I might be doing it wrong. B, Trevor is a slow-moving creature who takes a long time. Ask my girlfriend in the state of my apartment. It takes a long time for me to make self-improvements.
Okay.
And I think actually that's it. I think it's A and B. You're probably right. I think you're probably right. I know the people I've worked with most recently, I've asked them about this. Like, can I pay my LLC?
Yeah.
And they've said we much prefer if you don't. And that turned out to be a benefit of me because one of those kind of I have a couple clients that I work with a lot, and one of them actually that turned into me getting healthcare coverage because I qualified for a certain amount of W-2 hours with them.
Yeah.
And I was being paid through Cast and Crew, the payroll service.
Yeah.
And once you hit a certain amount of hours, they start covering your healthcare. So I know it paid off then, but I don't know if it's always the best thing.
But that's also in a W-2 circumstance.
I
understand.
Oh, you're talking about for 1099.
I mean, I guess I understand why an employer, if they're hiring you as an employee, mm-hmm. right, in that way, is going to say, well, then, yes, we want to hire you, not we want to have a vendor relationship with,
right.
Essentially a subcontractor
yeah.
who's subcontracting to you.
Yeah.
Right? But in that 1099 circumstance, I think that's right. That's the one where it feels like maybe there is, and I don't know either. I never had an LLC of my own to sort of like filter through, but I guess like being on the other side of it now, I definitely hear a lot of like, well, if you're going to hire somebody as a freelancer in this environment right now, it's better to have some place that it goes through in that way.
I think, the other thing I didn't mention is anything we charge a bill a client for, which I would recommend to anyone starting an LLC or a production business, rather.
Sure.
We add on a 15% production fee.
Yeah.
And that's basically to keep the lights on, to handle our operating costs. And, you know, it's just to ensure that we make some kind of profit on a project.
Sure.
One, it might be a little bit complicated if I was getting 1099 work and not charging that fee, because it becomes harder to. It's not that important that we evaluate who's bringing in what business and whatnot, but like, for example, this year I've started asking the guys, like, can we set aside some monthly money for research and development for live action pilots, teasers, and whatnot? And they're like, well, you know, you're bringing in enough live action work where like if that pays for itself, we don't even have to question that. So it's easier to kind of keep track of like where the money's coming from that way. Also,
sure.
If we don't have money coming in, 1099 work that isn't in that structure, that isn't with that 15% fee.
What's your balance now, between the kind of stuff that's running through Pig Apple and the kind of stuff that's running through Trevor Williams on his own?
I'd say about 50-50.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is nice. I'd like it to be 100-0. But
why?
I think at the heart of it, all of us, none of us want to work for anybody, you know. And it is nice to have ownership over your content. Even if a client's paying you to do it, at least you're the creative director of that. And so I guess. Although I do learn a lot, I guess, when I work for other people, I learn about like how they produce and direct, and I learn kind of like human interactive skills, and I learn new skills. But the dream has always been to be fully immersed in this company, and to have enough business to where I can just go there every day and we can grow and that kind of thing. I guess because it means the more I'm doing a Pig App and the less I'm doing for other people, the more we're growing and the more it's becoming its own entity.
And is it also that you have more? It's also that you have more stewardship of the project than the ones that go through Pig Apple.
Yeah, absolutely.
As opposed to when it is just Trevor. Some of that work, I assume, is still even editing work.
Yeah,
if you need to take it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I have to hit the deck and edit. Frequently.
For other people.
And I would say to anybody in the arts, we just did this editing workshop here for non-actors, but for people that, and I was in this position too when I first moved here, who are waiting tables and temping to make money, editing is not that hard. It's something we all, like, I believe, innately know how to do because we know when we're bored watching something and when we want to cut. And it's just a matter of taking the time to teach yourself the buttons to push. But it is such a great way to just hit the deck and make money. And I feel like there's always edit work available out there, or people always seem to want, if you're a decent
definitely
editor.
Definitely. Editing and sound, you can get paid for
absolutely
a lot, even on small budget stuff, because those are the things that people are willing to pay for.
Yeah.
That's actually how we met. You remember that?
Yeah.
We met at Disposable.
We were working at Disposable. I think you were you cutting the movie Kumari at the time?
I think this was even before that.
Pre-Kumari?
Yeah, because
pre-Kum?
Yeah, pre-Kum. we met because those guys at that time had an in with like the Universal Music Group. Right?
Oh yeah,
and that was when like internet video was still like everyone was sort of playing around with it, and they wanted this little content. And those guys used to make a lot of like EPK video material, and so I remember definitely like cutting a bunch of that stuff with you.
Yeah,
and at that time too, you were doing more acting. Are you still going out for acting stuff or no?
No, I kind of retired.
Yeah,
although like if anyone ever just like I like what you do specifically, and can you come do that for like two lines in your video?
Yeah.
I'll do it.
You'll do it?
I'll do anyone's video.
That's cool.
But I don't really audition anymore. And I don't do stand-up anymore, but I do miss doing characters. So I feel like there could be a reemergence of a Trevor character sometime.
Yeah. Yeah, because I also remember the big thing you were doing at that time. It was you lived with Adam Newman, right?
And yeah.
It was like you guys had a little comedy duo.
House of Clowns,
going.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was so you guys have stopped doing that, obviously.
We still write together.
Yeah.
And we still certainly goof off together, but he lives in LA now.
Yeah.
So that it was hard to perform with him when he moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think those were some of my most favorite times on stage is doing, like, we did these characters called the Nice Brothers,
uh-huh.
which was always a hoot. It's, you know, when you do stand up, like, you probably like kill one of every five or six shows, but when we did those characters, we killed every single show always. And I was like, why do I ever not do this? This is so much more rewarding.
What was the sort of turn for you from wanting to do more performance stuff to directing? It feels like it was around the time when you did the Andrew Law and Allison Rich pilot. That's how I remember it.
Yeah, that was actually like my first extremely rewarding. Like immerse myself in a project experience was directing this web series called Incognito for Allison and Andrew, which they I was so flattered that they wanted me to do it because I thought they were both so hilarious and I just wanted to do a goddamn good job. But I think by the time we got done with that, I was like, well, this. Whereas stand-up can feel so lonely and unrewarding when it's not going well, there are a lot of comics I noticed who wanted to keep getting up and like doing reps and working out bits. And every time I had a bad show, I wanted to go home and weep. and the last thing I wanted to do was more stand-up.
Yeah.
But when it came to directing, like I loved every bit of the process. And I loved pre-pro, I loved being on set, and I loved post. And even when it went shitty, I still loved figuring it out and have it. I mean, every single, when have you ever walked away from a project that you didn't feel like you needed to fix something for the next one?
Sure.
It's like you always have that. Mm-hmm. There's always something that doesn't go well.
Yeah.
But the fun of figuring that out for the next one just clicked more for me than it did for the stage work.
Sure.
And so I just kind of followed my heart, and I you know, life's short, so I thought I would put my eggs in the basket that I was enjoying the most.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what about it do you feel like has that?
There's a couple things, like working with other people as opposed to, in a vacuum is nice.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that every time you make a video, or every time you step into a new project, you're basically being introduced with other new creators and performers that
sure.
you've never worked with before.
Okay.
And that is, and they always like, you always learn so much through them about mm-hmm. different ways to be funny and different mm-hmm. ways to play things. So it's always fresh. But my dad's a sculptor. And I think there's an artistic aspect to it, and a craftsmanship to it that I really love as far as, even if you take like an edit, you take this huge chunk of video and you basically just like whittle it down. And you refine it and you polish it and you whittle it some more until it's like down to that really crystallized thing.
Yeah.
And, it's just growing up and watching my dad sculpt. I think like that resonated with me too. It's like that felt familiar to me. And it felt like there was like a craft in that too. And with shooting too, with like building a script, starting with an outline and then kind of fleshing it out with words and then with a storyboard and with a shoot plan and all that. So I think I just kind of liked constructing things in that sense.
Yeah. Do you, how visual of a process do you take? Do you storyboard everything?
Yeah. I storyboard most everything unless.
Do you draw?
I draw shitty.
Yeah. See, that's my problem with storyboard. I draw like a child.
I don't think it matters. I think stick figures are fine
because
your DP can figure it out when he sees it. You know, you just point to it and you're like, she's there, he's there. You know, there's the wood chipper over there. If we're making a recreation of Fargo, I guess. And I think what's important, though, is that, you know, you got your screen direction down, and it's more for you than for anyone else, I think, because it's for you to kind of see the thing and how it's supposed to transpire. I think somebody was asking me, a guy who was getting into directing, and I'm always really flattered when anyone asks my advice for this stuff, but he was like, what do you think is the most important thing? And I was like, well, basically the most important thing is like having a plan, and like closing your eyes, seeing how the thing looks when it's done, seeing how the day is going to go, kind of anticipating things, but being able to step into that room and throw that plan in the garbage when you realize that, like, oh, we can't shoot this side of the building, or, oh, we only have the room for half the time we thought, or one of our actors has laryngitis, or whatever it is. And so, yeah, I think that's where storyboarding comes in, is you have to have that initial plan.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I find, and this is just like maybe like the approach that I've had to take, because I also came out of that edit world, mm-hmm. right? And to me, I always felt like I found some of the story in the edit. So I always wanted to have like extra in anything I was directing, because I was like, I know that I'm not seeing the whole thing. You know what I mean? And planning for that.
Yeah.
Planning for like, what do I want it to be? What's my vision for this? But also, what are my contingency plans?
Exactly.
It was the hardest part of like sort of getting, you know, having to do it a few times and walking to an edit when you're directing, being like, well, I definitely didn't get it this time.
Yeah.
You know, or I didn't get all the pieces that I wish I had to really save it. That learning process we were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. If I ever like uploaded anything from my first cut that was just like my vision executed, it would be garbage. Like that first cut is basically, you know, I'll first try to get it to like, okay, here's what I thought it was going to be. And then you actually figure out what the reality is and what's working.
Yeah.
And so much of it is just, you know, in surprises. And that's what working with good actors is all about, because that's all they give you is like, it's, you know, you have your world and you can do so much with your imagination, but then they bring this whole other world to it. And, you know, you have to kind of let them have that world. Because they're giving you gifts and they're only making your thing twice as good because they're offering their whole world to you as well.
So what's some advice there in working with actors and getting the best out of them? Because I know that's an end of the process that you enjoy.
Yeah. I feel if you can like tase them or like use some sort of caning method, you know, just to keep them on task. I think that it's kind of cliche, but they say like the most important way to direct actors is to cast them right. And if you especially in our world, in the UCB world, if you like go to shows or watch videos and like see the person who brings the thing that you know your video needs, then there's not a whole lot of directing you have to do other than to have a conversation with them before the camera's rolling. I think that's also very important to just make sure you're on the same wavelength. Ask them what they like about the project, like what they're excited about doing. Because a lot of times everyone has the reasons for doing these things. If they're just like, I really want to work on this accent and this seems like a perfect opportunity to do it, but you imagined it another way, then you need to have that conversation. And I would say when in doubt, always go with something someone else is excited about, because they're going to be doing their best work when they're into it. And especially like if they start doing a thing and then you shut it down, then, you know, they've tried to sell you something and you shut the door on them and they're not going to try to sell you anything else. You know, they're just going to phone it in the rest of the day. So even if you don't feel like it's working, I feel like you have to give them the opportunity to express their ideas, to try out these things that they wanted to try out. And then, you know, if by the end of, you know, 6 or 7 takes, you still feel like you need something else that you're not getting, you ask them, you know, can we do one that's on book here just to know that we have it? But I think I think the most important thing is that they feel like they're a part of the process and that they're able to bring their ideas to the table.
Yeah.
The one thing I haven't said, which is the most important thing, if you're making something with a lot of dialogue, is that you guys have a table read and or a rehearsal ahead of time where everyone hears it, everyone has a pen and paper, and they make adjustments to make the words their own. And everyone is just, they've heard the scene, you even block it sometimes, you've seen what it looks like, and everyone knows how, you know, what they want to do with it. Because when you have that conversation in the middle of a stressful shoot, when you have 30 minutes to go and crews, you know, standing around and people are hot or cold or hungry, it totally changes the creative dynamic. Then it just feels like, it feels like you're diffusing a bomb.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something that also that I think people, especially like even in a circumstance where you're doing sketches or you're doing videos with friends on a weekend, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? That learning that the rehearsal is the thing that's going to help it become better.
Yeah.
You know, I think people have to learn that a little bit, because I think sometimes we feel like, oh, we're just going to throw something together.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But once you're on set and you're in that environment, and yes, the clock is ticking, and maybe you only have the space for X amount of time, or the weather conditions are what they are, or something about it is going to become complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Laying that groundwork ahead of time is the thing that, like, you can do that anywhere.
Yeah.
You absolutely. Can do that in any room. You can do it in your bedroom. You can do it in a room that you rent. You can do it, you know, in a park.
Yeah.
But it's just something that is going to give you the ability for everybody to get same page creatively ahead of time.
Yeah.
So that once the clock is ticking, you know.
Yeah. And you come up with the best shit then. It's like when are you having more fun than when you're riffing with your friends? You know, that's like where so many of the good ideas come from.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then if you're doing it again on set and like you get that great idea with, you know, 2 minutes to go and there's just no way to like change the shoot plan. And maybe that idea
right.
involves a prop or a
right.
costume. You're like, oh, you know, it'd be hilarious. What if he was actually a plumber? And you're like, yeah, all right. But then we got to go get the tool belt and we got to,
yeah.
You know, we got to get the faucet and all that. So like have that imagination station somewhere else.
Yeah. No, that's true. And I think the other thing you said that I think is also pretty valuable advice is like, don't worry about it if it's not going, you know, if it's not exactly right
mm-hmm.
out of the gate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially if it's the first setup of a scene. I think sometimes people can rush to, like you're saying, can rush to like, nope, that's not what I want. That's mm-hmm. not what I want from the seat that I'm in.
Yeah.
But especially if it is like, if you haven't rehearsed it or you haven't had that workout time or you haven't had a lot of time to get set up, it's like an actor in that position is getting up to, is working it up, right?
Yeah.
They're warming up still.
Absolutely.
And the ability to sort of be like, if we know we have 3 hours to do this scene, let's let this first setup run a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And play with it here
mm-hmm.
because even if it doesn't work after six, then you can be like, you know, let's just try it this way one time. And if that starts to feel better, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least it hasn't been like I shut down your idea or early in the process, like judge your ability to just like turn it on and be perfect.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That first take is always like a long one because it's often when the actor is kind of figuring it out. And, you know, like I'll sometimes go a little bit Meisner on the first couple takes and be like, all right, let's just roll camera. Let's try reading this line for the next few minutes, just over and over again. You know, just try a few different things and let me know when something feels like when you feel like you feel really good about it.
Yeah.
You know, and then we'll start to kind of work out from there. Or we'll do that in like a blocking rehearsal or a tape rehearsal or whatever. But I think like. Yeah, actors are, they're not just people. They're very intelligent and sensitive human beings, and like, you know, they can't go 0 to 60. They gotta stretch out and warm up and take some jumpers before they start, you know, hitting those half court shots. So,
and I think you're right that the more sort of like aptly that the role has been cast, or the more that the piece has been sort of like, you know. The better suited that the person is for that specific role,
yeah,
innately in their skill set, the faster it's going to be to get it to that place. And professional actors do have that ability to get it right on the first take,
yeah.
But usually, also in that process, there have been table reads and, you know, studying time, and
right.
you know, they're given the luxuries that I mean, how many times have you shown up to set and it's like you hand it, you hand an actor script that moment?
Excellent. Yeah, absolutely.
I remember the early days of like videos around here. It was like you'd send out a script ahead of time, but none of the actors would read it.
No, they tend not to.
Because they're like, I'm an improviser. I'll fucking figure it out.
What's this all about? Oh, that's kind of funny.
I'll show up and, well, what is this? What are we doing? What are we doing?
And I think that's when you get to that, like, you can have a plan, but you should also be ready to react. And, you know, most of us have been through the program here, so reacting is a big part of all of our training. And that's why I would say, even if you don't want to be an improviser, but you want to be a filmmaker, taking a 101 level class might be helpful or more just to develop those reflexes and to know how the actor's thinking. But I think there have been a lot of projects where I was just sort of dropped in the middle of something and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And if I hadn't done things like Sketch Cram or, you know, like 24-hour film festivals, I don't think I would have the confidence to even believe that I could make something with no preparation. But, you know, I had those experiences to draw from to know that, like, okay, well, we will take this one step at a time. We will shoot one shot, and then we will figure out the next shot. And sometimes that's all you can do. And I've had, like, some of my more, high-stakes professional projects have been no better prepared than a Sketch Cram video where I probably would have had a nervous breakdown had I not kind of been through that before in practice with these like quick turnaround kind of exercises that we do around here.
Yeah, I can dig it. Let's talk about The Jane a little bit because I think that's a project that you put a lot of effort into and was sort of like that also felt to me like the most recent project that you have thrown 100% of Trevor Williams behind, right?
Yeah.
In a way that's like, this is mine and this is mine across the board.
Sure.
What made you sort of like inspired to take on a project like that? What were you sort of like looking to do when you started down the road of what was a Kickstarter and a pretty elaborate production and a festival process and a Vimeo process and all that?
I guess, for lack of better words, I had my heart broken and I was kind of just adrift. And I went to the Cannes Film Festival with my friend Heather Fink, who has a movie coming out.
Yeah, I saw that.
And, I was just sort of feeling like I knew that I wanted to like dive into a project or do a something, and I was just out there kind of feeling like I need to like do something for myself that's like a little bit bigger than the things I've done in the past. And I had watched all these shorts at Cannes, and they have like it's a really exclusive, bougie event, but like even if you're a freeloader like I was, like you can find these like little places to watch films there, and you can sneak into stuff. So I just felt like I could do them, a lot of them that I saw, and I had this sort of kernel of an idea already. And by the time I was flying home, I was writing the script for it, and I was very, very determined to do it. And I just kind of set milestones like, August will be for raising money. September will be for pre-pro. October will be for shooting. You know, November will be for cutting. And then we'll get it in. We'll submit to festivals by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fuel of like having not a whole lot else going for me at the time helped a lot.
Yeah.
Because I really felt like, I don't know to whom, but that I had something that I wanted to prove. And I guess that was just that I could make something that looked like a film that was compelling and felt real and, you know, even kind of adult and that could be taken seriously. And I think that a lot of the actors that were on board for it who sort of made my dream come true by working with me, because they were like people that I just really wanted to work with and was so surprised they wanted to do it. But I think they also wanted to perform in a way that was truthful and taken seriously and that showed that, like, they could be really fucking real. And, I think the best improvisers we have here do that on stage, but it's always for laughs.
Sure.
Or it always results in laughs. And we, you know, we weren't avoiding laughs, but that we were just going for something totally different. And, you know, I think that was sort of the motivation for doing that.
Yeah. And then sort of like the process from that first inspiration going to Cannes through when you were sort of like wrapped on the project, at least sort of like picture locked and done.
Uh-huh.
How long was that process for you?
It was from July. Well, from from July mm-hmm. until it was probably last cut was the first week in November.
Yeah.
What
do you feel like you learned from that process going forward, or where did it sort of like meet your expectations, and where did it leave you sort of like, you know?
Yeah, I think I learned that. It's corny, but that you can basically do whatever project you dream up. If you can kind of just see how it would fit together, and the only thing holding you back from it is, you know, the initiative to do it, or what you worry other people will think, that you can pretty much do anything. If the right project came along, and, you know, I have some kind of kernels of it, too, but I could kind of piece together how it would be funded and shot. Like, I feel like I could make a feature now, whereas before then, I didn't. Because I didn't necessarily know how everything would work. But, you know, I've been through that process for, like, one-fifth of a movie, the process of, like, raising the money and pulling together the crew and the festivals and all that. So now it's just like, okay, dream a little bigger, and you're going to have to put a little bit more effort into it.
Right. Yeah, it's also funny because it is like it is a nice sort of like training wheels for that, but it also is kind of different. It's the difference between like, riding a bike and like driving a motorcycle in some ways, right? Like there's a lot more stakes once you're in that motorcycle.
Yeah.
Is that something that you want to do, or where do you sort of like want, like did it leave you saying, yes, I want to do that, or did it leave you saying like, maybe I'd rather do different types of work than the film world.
No, I would definitely like to make a feature.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said to me recently, like, your life or career is never going to change making lateral moves. And so as much as I really do love making short form things. I love making videos, and I feel like there's so much gratification in being able to conceive and put something out there and get feedback for it in a short period of time. But I also feel like it's that lateral move thing is kind of true. So as I get older and have done more things, the appeal of doing things that I've already done lessens.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, I always sort of have selling a television show or making a feature in the mm-hmm. back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always... Every project I jump into now, I kind of look at that, especially for web series or web videos, like, could this be something that would turn into something bigger?
Sure. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, and it also sounds, though, like maybe the process changes. Because like you said before, you kind of want to go through the company
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the Kickstarter route.
Yeah.
Right. Would you do a Kickstarter again if you were going to do a feature or something like that? Would you go that way? Or is it more like what you want to figure out is how to get enough flowing through your regular business to have the space to take chances on that, like, development stuff?
I think it's probably a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah.
I think if there was an idea I felt like needed to get made sooner than later, I would probably take it to investors or try to find investors first. The ideas I've sort of played with in my head all would have investors with vested interests in investing in this film, investmentally speaking.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would want to make a film that where the story is one that people think need to be told. So I think, like, That would be my first approach.
And I guess it also sounds like you are speaking of this hypothetically. This isn't right. Where your brain is at.
Well,
you're not thinking about these kind of undertakings.
Well, yeah, I am for television right now.
Okay.
So for TV, we are actively making a lot of teasers and pilot presentations, and that's where some of that R&D money is going.
And that's where that energy, creative energy, is going too in that way.
Yeah. So right now, that's kind of where my mind is at.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been working on lately is either. Or occasionally we'll use that month to put out just a sketch, a one-off that we think is funny that, just reminds people that, hey, we still make comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I often find, I get the most calls after putting out a decent video that I make for myself just as a way to advertise or just as a way to, stay active. But when we're not doing that, it's like... it's making these little teasers and going out and shooting something that looks like a 30-second to 2-minute version of the TV show that we're trying to sell.
Yeah. And that's where the sort of energy is. It's not right now towards that feature process or finding investors in that.
At the moment, it's not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that's just because that's what's sort of more likely to hit? Or is it because, I guess I'm just wondering, I guess what I'm ultimately getting at was because I've definitely gone down a few different paths. I feel like I spent a long time editing documentary features, right? And I don't think that I ever want to do that again. I've done it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've done it, but it also was such a...
You did an amazing job. It's a great film.
Thanks, man.
And I mean, Kumari, Netflix.
It was like a 3-year span of cutting doc. Yeah. Features. It was like one after another, after another, after another. And it was so emotionally draining of the scope of those kind of projects and the level of coordination it took and the amount of brain space it took. I was like, I'm done. I learned from it. It was an incredible storytelling experience and creative experience and technical experience and gauntlet to go through. But I don't want to go through that again.
Right.
And maybe I would go at a documentary from a different angle. I'd, direct or shoot or produce a documentary in a different way. But sitting in that chair, I have so much respect for documentary editors because sitting in that chair is really hard on a daily basis. And you live with that footage for so much. But I was exhausted from it and was I need to flip my life. I need to do a 180, do something totally different for a while.
Yeah, get outside.
And I just didn't know if the process of that film left you being let me take a breath from this type of process because it was such a personal undertaking, a big undertaking, and a long undertaking too.
I think you're right. I think that film came out well, or at least as I wanted it to, because I was very passionate about it. And there just hasn't been a feature idea I've had that I've been that passionate about. I've had a few and then I started writing them and it keeping on the script felt like so much work. And then I was just, it just led me to this thought process well, do you actually care about this story? And, it kind of didn't. To answer your question, I think it takes so much out of you to do one of these passion projects that you have to check in with yourself and be like, do I care about this? Because I'm going to be living with this thing for the next couple of years. And for now, I haven't fallen in love with that project yet from a feature standpoint. But I am really into some of these shows that we're trying to develop. So I think the feature has taken a backseat to that right now because, again, I'm just kind of following my heart at the moment.
Yeah.
And honestly, you've been through development. You can get to a point with developing something, and this has happened to us before, where, you just don't care about the project anymore. You've knocked on so many doors.
Yeah.
And it's changed so many times.
Yeah.
And it no longer really resembles how it started. And you're like, yeah, you know what? I just, even if this got greenlit tomorrow, I don't think I care about this anymore.
Yeah.
So that's always a possibility with trying to develop a show too. I just haven't gotten there yet with the projects.
With the projects that you're currently working on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can dig it. I was talking to Chris Knight a few weeks ago, and he was saying that one big thing that he's had to learn is he's almost pitching himself like an actor mm-hmm. does in a lot of ways. Like you're as a director being attached to things, or you know, or a writer director, you're sort of you're on that above the line, you're on the talent side of the package
right.
of what you're trying to sell. So I guess, yeah, what have you sort of like learned, or what do you like about that side of the job?
Chris maybe like may have figured it out more than I have, because I'm still like always a little bit not confused, but I'm never quite sure how to sell myself in relation to the project. I've asked people to like look at my treatments and teasers for notes, and one that I frequently got in the past was like, well, you have like one line about you in this, and like, you know, like you should sell yourself a little bit more in this project. And I think it's hard sometimes when you're so excited about the idea to think about yourself as like another entity that's going to make, you know, the sell even harder or make it more appealing. Mm. I should talk to Chris about that. Because lately I have been like, okay, well, I'm going to attach myself as a creator here, and like, what, you know, what can I show them I'm going to bring to the table that they're not getting already? And that can be tricky sometimes. I think one of the tricky parts about development is like there's so much guessing involved. You know, you're guessing like what talent they're going to be excited about, what concepts there are. And if you can find someone who you're pitching to at that company, whether it's the person you're working with directly or someone else who can just level with you, and just kind of talk with you like a person about yeah. like, okay, I think this is really what they might go for, mm-hmm. Or I don't think they're going to go for this. And I feel like just taking the guesswork out of it is so important, or just so helpful that it'll make your life a lot easier. There's nothing worse than just trying to guess how you can get people to like your idea. You know, I would rather just like have confidence in my idea, know what it is and know that I like it and know what they're looking for and to see if we have anything to talk about. Because if we don't, then like, let's not try to put lipstick on a pig ear. Like, you know, we'll find another thing that might make sense. But if you start making those compromises and changing it, you know, to fit what you think they might want, then you're not going to care about it as much anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting, sort of like the idea of like, what are you bringing to the table?
Yeah.
You know, and it does feel like that. It also must be an interesting dynamic in relationship to the company, too, because a lot of like what the company's background, like those guys have such a visual, you know yeah. what I mean? You guys each do bring something different to the table. So
yeah.
it's kind of like it must feel like you've got to find something. If somebody's going to be a really good fit in that ecosystem, it's going
sure.
to be something that has a lot of visual effects and maybe
oh, yeah.
some animation and some and a live action component to it. Right. So you're all
yeah.
sort of like. Sinking your teeth into it and putting the biggest assets of what you guys have as a trio
yeah.
into the project.
I think everybody, you know, has something to bring to every project. You just have to figure out, you just have to do some think work and always figure out what that is. But to anybody out there who has the same thoughts that I have, which is just like, well, why am I going to attach myself? Who am I? Like, the answer is, there are answers. Like, you just have to sit and think about it. But yes, in our company, we are unique too. Like, we're three guys from Georgia who moved to New York together, and we make animation, live action. We've all done a lot of comedy, but we've done a lot of other kinds of things. And so there's room in there for us to play a lot of different kinds of cards, or for us to like make our new kind of hybrid-y things
yeah.
that people haven't seen a lot of.
Very cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, hope you finish those taxes.
Oh, fuck. You just reminded me.
Get it all done. And have a great summer, man.
You too.
Later. And that will do it for episode number 53 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks to Trevor for sitting down and taking the time to chat. You can check out his work, his Pig Apple work, at pigapple.com. And I think Trevor's got his own portfolio site out there as well, as a freelance guy who's grinding. And thanks to you out there for listening to this show. You, the listeners, are why we do this show every week. And hopefully this is a show that is beneficial to your work as a comedian, as a filmmaker, and as a creative. If it is, we would love if you would rate and review us on iTunes. That's the most direct
way for you to tell us and the world that this show has benefit to you. You can also subscribe there at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. You can also connect with us on Twitter and Facebook at UCB Digital. And you can send us an email if you're so inclined. If you have episode ideas, want to chat, want to connect about anything, filmmaking, comedy, or otherwise, podcasts, plural, at ucbcomedy.com. We will be back with another brand new episode next week. The Career Tracker is back. Sophie, we're right in the middle of these records. I'm so excited to check in with our career tracking folks.
Yeah, me too. It's been really fun.
And not the paths that we were expecting. Some twists and turns this week. So
life has a way.
It has a way of getting in the middle. So we'll check in with them. And that is coming up next week on this show. We hope you will be back. As always, we enjoyed sipping a Bronx beer during this show. We had the Boom Boom White IPA, available July and August only, so for a limited time. It's a limited selection, and you can find it wherever excellent craft beer is sold. And you can also go to thebronxbrewery.com for more information on all of their awesome craft beers, including that Boom Boom White IPA. And thanks to the Bronx for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Okay, that's it for us. Check out new videos all the time on UCB's Vimeo, Facebook, and YouTube pages, and we will be back with a brand new episode next week. Until then, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.